Welcome to the Red Wine. I'm sorry we had some technical difficulties. Our producer's internet went completely down, so I apologize for that. I am Jody, and with us also tonight is Diane.
Good evening, everybody.
And tonight we also brought back Brad Slager. We had him last week with he wrote an article for Red State. We brought him back because Brad is very close to this situation. He also is with us at KLRN. So, Brad, why don't you just give everybody a little bit of background with your proximity to Parkland?
Sure. I just want to first applaud you ladies for having the Replacements as your intro music. So it just kind of sets the tone for me pretty nicely. Applause for that. But, yeah, I reside out in Coral Springs. I'm literally about 3 miles away from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. So I'm right in the heart of where all of the news has been transpiring. And over the course of the year or so since then, I've written a number of articles at a few different outlets, Red State, for instance, Sunshine State News, but I've covered pretty much a variety of the background stories to this, not so much the shooter himself, but the administrative foul ups that have taken place in law enforcement, the school board, local authorities. I mean, there's been a number of ways that there have been officials messing up over the course of years that pretty much led up to this.
Yeah, and so this is why I really felt like Brad and Diane, because Diane has over a decade's worth of experience on a school board, and really this is very much school board related. So tonight we're going to have Andrew Pollack. He just released his book. It's called Why Meadow Died. Meadow was his daughter that died in Parkland on Valentine's Day 2018 in that horrific Parkland shooting, school shooting. Being here in Colorado, I can remember being at work the day Columbine happened and how horrific that was. I can remember everything I was doing, and honestly, the doctor I was working with was thinking he was going to have to run and go to the emergency room because we weren't really sure how many intakes we were going to be getting. So it's amazing to me, all these years later, we are still talking about school shootings. So I just really feel like this book does so much more of a
comprehensive.
Yeah. I just think it just addresses the issues, don't you think, so much more than anything I've seen out there. Because we always talk about the gun and we always talk about mental health. And like Brad said, he's been covering all of this in the background. There is one program that has popped up, and instead of myself sitting here and reading what it all means, or Diane or Brad, we're going to play a clip because Laura Ingram did a little bit on this. And she's just an amazing job of kind of summing it up. So while we're playing that clip, we're going to get Mr. Pollack. Hopefully you guys will get a little background on what this Promise program is. We can play that clip,
Lou. The more we learn about the school shooting in Florida, the more it appears that a Broward County invention may have played a role in what happened. And what am I talking about? In 2013, Broward County and their new school superintendent, Robert Runcie, had a novel idea. Lower school expulsions and arrests by reducing police involvement. Sounds simple. They called it the Promise Program. Preventing recidivism through opportunities, mentoring, intervention, support, and education. It's quite an acronym. You see, in 2011 into 2012 school year, Broward had the highest public school-related arrest record in the state. More than 1,000 kids in that year alone were arrested. The Obama administration, Education Secretary Arne Duncan, and Attorney General Eric Holder were so impressed by the Promise Plan that it inspired their own new national guidelines.
As it stands, far too many students across this country are diverted from the path to success by unnecessarily harsh discipline policies and practices that exclude them from school for really minor infractions. Too often, so-called zero-tolerance policies, however well-intentioned they might be, make students feel unwelcome in their own schools. They disrupt the learning process, and they can have significant and lasting negative effects on the long-term well-being of our young people.
Well, I'd say a violent kid whose outbursts are tolerated week after week, leading years later to a school shooting, also has lasting negative effects on young people and disrupts the learning process, Eric. But I digress. The Obama bureaucrats incentivize Broward to go even further, awarding the district nearly $54 million in grants to improve the lives of students in poverty and students of color. The standard to show that their lives are actually improving? Fewer arrests at schools, less police involvement, fewer disciplinary problems, at least on paper. So school administrators were basically paid to deal with student crime in-house and keep the cops off the premises. Had Nicholas Cruz been arrested or charged by police for bringing knives or bullets to school or for other various infractions, threats and so forth, he might not have been able to buy that gun he used to kill 17 people. When CNN's Jake Tapper pressed Sheriff Scott Israel about his office's approach to student crimes, he said this.
What you're referring to is the Promise Program, and it's giving the school, has the ability, under certain circumstances, not to call the police, not to get the police involved on misdemeanor offenses, and take care of it within the school. It's an excellent program.
Well, what did we expect he was going to say? Until it helps a mass killer maintain a clean record up to the time of his shooting, that is. Broward County Sheriff Union President Jeff Bell revealed this to me last week.
They don't want the police officers making arrests on campus, and they don't want the drugs to be found on campus, and they don't want the warrants to be served on campus because it looks like there's bad stats at the school. So I place a lot of blame on the school board with that and some of the programs that they've initiated with the state attorney and the sheriff's office in the years past. For example, the Promise Program. The problem is with them, when that program started, we took all discretion away from the law enforcement officers to effect an arrest if we choose to.
The clip go.
So we are back, and joining us we have Andrew Pollack. Again, this is in regards to the book that he wrote, Why Meadow Died, which reading the book is just so powerful.
Hello. I'm so sorry.
So Andrew, we're live right now. If you could let us let's talk about your book. If you want to introduce your book yourself, we obviously know why you wrote it and how emotional it was for me personally to read it. So if you could, talk a little bit about it. I'm not sure if you're aware, we have Brad Slager, who is Brad on with us right now? Well, he actually lives in Coral Springs. And he has written extensively about the failures of the sheriffs, Broward County sheriffs, about the failures of the school board. I think it's a great contact for you to make with him. I know he does want to sit down and speak with you about that. So over to you. I think Brad is coming back, but I'm going to bit about your book and first
sure.
I'm so sorry about your I read the introduction by Hunter, and he really brought her. You could see who she was and how much she meant to so many people. It was just a beautiful, beautiful tribute that he wrote to her.
Yeah, I can't even. I hold the book. I can't even scroll through the pages. It's tough being a parent of a child. My daughter was on February 18th, Douglas. And I wrote this book to honor my daughter. She would want me to hold accountable. Policy, every entity, everyone that let it happen. Nothing's going to stop me from exposing everybody and holding accountable that role in letting my daughter get murdered. And that's why I'm on such a quest and me to put that book together, which I call a manual now for parents. And every parent or grandparent that has a school-aged child, because child's life dependent on it. And it, you know, truly understand what happened in Parkland, this is all the truth, and I put it into this book.
Your book was, as I said, I experienced a range of emotions from sadness to anger. Being on, as you know, I was a 14-year school board member, and the failures when Columbine happened, our school, which is a small school, we're a very small school, we immediately implemented safety measures such as putting in bulletproof secured entrance. All doors in the school were locked except for one entrance only that you could get into, which was, you know, where the main office was. We had the security cameras all around. When I heard what happened in Columbine, two things immediately came to my mind. A, of course, what was he doing on the property? But B, how did he get in? Scene.
What happened at Marjorie Stoneman Doug? And how was he not seen? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of, I know everything because I've lived it.
Right.
If you could believe, he called the killer. Uber went to his house where they picked him up with a rifle bag, a straight out rifle bag, and drove him to the school with the rifle bag, where he got out of the Uber in front of the school. There were no cars, where a monitor saw him. Andrew Medina, saw him get out of the car with a rifle bag and doesn't call a code red, doesn't do anything. Just watches a student that they had a meeting about a year prior, that if anyone was going to shoot the school up, it was going to be him. And he doesn't call code red, but he warns his monitor friend building, who proceeds to go hide in the closet and doesn't call a code red.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so multiple failures. The policies at the school were to keep the gates locked unless somebody was at the gate, and they didn't follow those policies. And to this date, you know, no one's been held accountable at the administrative level. None of them, they had them on, but, you know, they had them on like silent. So none of them, but, you know, there was none of them called a code red. Okay, the main monitor guy who watched him get out of the car said he didn't want to be the guy that got the police there.
Oh, my God.
He didn't actually, he heard the shots. He saw the rifle bag, he says in the interview with the sheriff's office, saw the rifle bag, heard the shots, but he didn't see the gun shooting. He didn't see the killer with the gun. So he didn't want to be the one that would have all the police come. So he doesn't call Code Red. He warns his, he leaves in the golf cart. And like he said, he whooped out of there with the golf cart to go get the deputy, who, when he goes and gets the deputy and brings him to the door where the shooter is, retreats from the door. He doesn't call Code Red either. That would have saved my daughter on the third floor. He retreats to a wall where he stays there for about 50 minutes, hiding behind the wall while the kids are getting killed inside the building. And my daughter got shot 9 times. So they were supposed to put in a fire alarm system that would be on a delay. So that would be this person in the office. If there was like a fire or it would signal to would a false alarm or what was going on in the building if it was a fire and people needed to evacuate. And they put in the money and the invoice for this. So let me say why it's so important. So my daughter was on the third floor. So now that so the killer shoots off 90 rounds between the first floor and the second floor. So when you shoot a gun, it exhausts as fumes and smoke every time you shoot a gun. So that smoke let the fire alarm go off from all those rounds. Okay, and I know they heard the rounds on the third floor. My daughter's teacher, who's got the IQ of a guinea pig, okay, puts my daughter out into the hallway after she hears the 90 rounds just because the smoke alarm goes off. Right, fire since the 1960s in this country. So she puts her kids out into the hallway, okay, where my daughter gets shot 4 times. Then she puts she gets some kids, brings them in, but then she locks her door, right? And when my daughter's locked out, now she, and then they lock. I find out they lock the bathroom doors where they tried to get in to hide. They locked the bathroom doors because there was kids vaping. So now the teacher locks my daughter out, and then the killer just walks down the hallway and shoots my daughter another 5 times. And she tried to save one of the girls there, my daughter, but when she got shot, the bullets actually went through her and killed the girl underneath her too. And none of them, even this teacher, you know, even though she's got the IQ of a guinea pig, she should come clean and say, you know what, we didn't get the proper training, and go up the ladder. But no one does this. No one accepts any responsibility. The monitors, the deputies that pull up on scene, none of them, the 4 or 5 of them that don't go in the building and let kids get killed, none of them accept any responsibility. The teacher, the monitors, the school district, not one person. The sheriff who got removed, he's an amazing leader. You know, he's been on CNN. He's had amazing leadership in Broward County. 2 mass shootings, both of them were just no response. Someone just retired. I don't know which one. One of them. So this district is doing an investigation. It's almost 2 years. You figure it out. We failed. You know what I mean? There's been almost going on 2 years that they put these people on assignment. That's what they do in Broward, Rumsey. Everyone's up. They assign them other places with no accountability, nothing. The vice principal's reassigned, you know. It takes 2 years for a school district to do an investigation onto who. I want to know who allowed the open against the protocol. Okay, just at the school, the kid can't get into the school and the doors are shut. And right, bring your rifle bags in. My daughter's building's wide open. The doors, they let them open, and no one's been held accountable. It's almost 2 years, so it's only up to Mr. Pollock to take every. All he had to call is lock the school down. That's what he does. That's a freaking could have just said Code Red. You know what I mean? Would have done a better job at the gate than this piece of garbage. Correct. So, but you can't say the two words that would have saved everybody and the whole school, Code Red. What is your job? You know what I mean? That's his job.
I wanted to say that most schools, we have safety committees. Now, when I first started on the school board, and we're going back to 2004, I happened to hear a story on NPR where they said, do you know how safe your school is? Ask them about the safety committee. Where's the safety committee reports? So, me being a new school board member, I asked, where's our safety committee report? Oh, yeah, we have one. We have one. And I said, good, I want to see it. Come to find out, not only did they not have a school safety report, but their school safety hadn't met in probably years. So I took it upon myself to get the chief of police, fire chief, and all the, you know, most important members that for your building. And we sat down and literally went through every possible type of scenario that could happen from inside, outside, propane explosions and whatnot, and what we would do with the students. And we put those actions into place. And I have to wonder if that's something, it seemed as though, according to the teachers, they just didn't seem like they were trained for this type of a situation that would go on.
Well, they had actually had a retired Secret Service do a whole evaluation and threat assessment of the school. And told and laid everything out a few months before the shooting. They gave them everything to do, and they never did anything. 13, there was, I think it was around Sandy Hook era, the superintendent said he was doing everything. He was doing the protocols. He was doing the single point of entries, the code reds. He was supposed to, the door locks. He said he was going to do everything. If he would have, maybe did one thing that he promised to do to the legislature, that to the legislatives in Florida, that he, we have him on video saying he's going to do all these things, and he never did anything. The guy. So, and now my daughter was murdered, and the guy's still there with his $400,000 plus a year job.
So, is Runcie still the superintendent?
Yeah, he's still the superintendent. He just got, you know, there's 9 board members in Broward, and he's got 6 of them in his pocket, you know. So 3 of them gave him a bad evaluation, and 3 of them voted to remove him. But he's got 6 votes, and if the people in Broward are okay with that type of incompetence, then like I tell them, then you roll your dice every day you send your kid to one of these Broward schools. And they still practice that promise program. It's still in play in Broward. They don't have an issue with it, these people in Broward. They think they're doing a service to these kids by not showing them accountability.
And
that's what's going on in Broward. And it's not only in Broward,
absolutely.
Parents need to know that these policies that I talk about in my book, Why Meadow Died, are in the whole country. And if they don't believe it, just look at California. They just passed a bill in California, signed into law, that it's illegal to suspend or expel disruptive kids. That's you guys can look that up. Gavin Newsom signed that into law last week, that it's illegal now. So I don't know how any parent could think it's okay that kids could be disruptive in the class with them, with their child, and think it's okay. So, and that's going on all across the country in a lot of schools. And that's why this book that I wrote is very important for parents to read it. So you guys are in education. So you know what's going on. A lot of parents like myself didn't know. But now that I put this book out, parents, I'm telling you, you have no excuse now to say, I didn't know what was going on at the school, because it's all in this book, and parents are ultimately responsible for where they put their kids. Okay, you want to put your kid in that school, you should know what's going on. And if you want to know what's going on, you read the book, learn, and ask questions at the school, and you'll find out right away if these type of kids are in the schools with your kid.
Absolutely.
I'm on East Coast, and I can't even tell you how many interviews. Yeah, when you want. and we could do another. I have no problem. You guys in the West Coast, you say? Okay, and then bring it into the teacher at the school. Look, and then they're educated. The parents, you know, you guys are in education, so you understand what they did to these public schools. It's horrible, you know, what's going on in these public schools. No child, no parent should put their kid in an environment where kids, they label, you guys know about this, when they label kids that are special needs but emotionally disturbed or oppositional defiant disorder. Am I saying it right? And they label those kids special needs, which is ridiculous. You know, it's bad for the kids that really have learning disabilities and that we should be helping with they have autism or dyslexia or that, you know, have a problem with those type of kids in schools. But when they emotionally it's a big problem, and parents should really know about this kind of stuff. I didn't know. And look, my daughter ended up getting murdered by a kid just that fits that same thing with the special needs. And it took him a year to get him out of the middle school, the teacher, if you saw the notes she had to write.
I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head as far as these kids, you know, going through the system. In New Hampshire, I'm not going to name, you know, the school or anything. There was a student that was inhibited these very type of symptoms to the point where the school had him specifically evaluated by a specialist, and that specialist stated that the student cannot function in the regular mainstream school because it's not a matter of if he's the type that would commit a mass atrocity. It's a matter of when. Yeah. This is a third grade student. So the school district... The school district sent him, so he's now in residential school, and he's not part of that school district anymore.
Good.
And that's what more schools need to do.
Correct. They need to, and people need to, if they don't take a stand, politicians, I tell everyone, could only do so much for you at a local level. It's the parents and the grandparents and the community that has to do something. If they don't, the public school systems are done. There's going to be more segregation in the country because people that the haves are going to afford private school. Okay. These things don't happen in private school. It doesn't take just to figure it out. Why? Because the discipline's different. They don't take kids emotionally disturbed or with that oppositional defiant disorder, and they don't have to take them. And that's a big part of it. Those special needs like that, and the discipline. They're not going to tolerate at a private school what they'll tolerate at a public school. So parents, you know, they really got to speak up because the public school systems are under attack. Like, look at what happened in California. You know, it's definitely going on. But ladies, I'm going to go. My aunt and uncle are in from Denver. Yeah, I've been traveling. They live in, what's that place? Hill something. Cherry Hill? Cherry Hill, they got a nice place up in Winter Park, and it's my uncle, so I'm going to go in there and say hello, and then we could schedule another time when you have Brad on.
Absolutely, and actually, if I can, I will connect you and Brad together, so that way you and he can discuss, maybe
yeah,
he can...
Want. No problem.
And thank you so much to have you again, because I think we need to make sure this issue stays in the forefront, because
we're doing it.
We're going to do it. Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your
time.
All
right, ladies. Have a good night. Anytime.
Thank you, Mr. Pollock.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Out of bed with this crazy feeling in my head. I said, get up, get your man above the red flag.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm, but even then he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq, Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now. 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
And I believe we are back. What a thought-provoking discussion with Andrew Pollack. I can't believe the complete breakdown of everything from the school district to the sheriffs. But we have Brad Slager here. He wasn't able to ask questions, but we're hooking him and Andrew up. And I know Andrew's going to be coming back on the show again. But Brad, why don't you talk a little bit about what you heard and what you hope to achieve.
Kind of expand on things, too. He was mentioning the school board towards the end there and what's going on with them. This is just a completely bat-crap crazy organization here in Broward. When all the events leading up to things, bigger problems were found with Scott Israel, who was the Broward County Sheriff, number of issues with his department, starting with his deputies on site that day, but also going forward, a lot of the things they were doing. Israel eventually got removed. Once we get the new governor, Ron DeSantis, when he was installed this past January, the very first week he was on duty, one of the first things he did was get rid of Israel. He was, I mean, that adamant about it. When it comes to the school board, however, Robert Runcie, he's the one that runs, he's the superintendent. He's also an acolyte of Barack Obama. So that's why he's so adamant about getting this promise program that originated in the Obama camp. And yeah, like you said, you know, Andrew said he's got, you know, 6 of 9 support. The governor cannot remove the superintendent because he's appointed by the school board. And correct. The governor only has influence over who's elected. The school board's elected. So since they're the electees, they're the ones that put Runcie into power. So what he's actually called, Ron DeSantis has called for a grand jury investigation to see if he can use that to leverage Runcie out of power here. But the school board itself has just been completely acting with malpractice since the shooting, even beforehand, of course, there's a number of issues. But afterwards, Runcie and others were, for instance, saying the shooter was never in the promise program. Then we found out that, in fact, he was. So what they started doing was parsing words, because what happened is the shooter had gotten into some altercation in school, and that was when he was going to get transferred into promise. He never went into the program, however. So it was an administrative move. They signed him up effectively, but he never went and attended the program. So all of a sudden the school board saying, well, yeah, he was never in it. That's what we meant when they were actually lying about him being in the program. But the real problem there is once he didn't show up, that's when he should have been brought into a courtroom before a judge. And then his criminal record would have been established. And this began when he was in middle school, just to give you an idea how many years they've been dealing with this problem student. So there, it's just been an administrative screw up from start to finish regarding this one individual. So you can get an idea just how vast it is in the program itself.
Now, let me ask you this question. Has anyone made an FOIA request for all emails between school board members and Runcie dating to those specific time frame?
That has been a problem as well. There's been a number of times documents have been requested. They're supposed to be public record because they're the school board, of course.
Correct.
But the school board claims, because of the nature of this, because it's a shooting and because there were victims, they keep claiming privacy issues and safety concerns and things of that nature.
There's no privacy issues. They have to release the document within a certain amount of time. They can redact the information or they can be fined.
Yeah, there was one that was issued and it was heavily redacted, something 60 or 70%, you know, when they issued it. Did it in digital format. And one of the local now, they transferred the digital file to another software program. It erased the redaction. So they had the full report. And then the school board went and sued the newspaper for legal reasons. They ended up dropping that after a couple of days when they came under severe public relations fire, of course. But, I mean, it's just an extension of the incompetence and corruption that they've shown in this school board.
Yeah, because what I would be interested in is the emails between the superintendent and the school board members, especially the 6 that are in question that seem to be completely supporting him. And as a matter of fact, I think I am going to put in a request for that information. And I'm going to cite Florida's law, and I'm also going to state that I am a former school board member. I'm a selectman now, but former school board member. So, you know, it's like, don't play me. Because I know how it works and I know what you have to provide me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And I will make it public. I have no qualms about doing that, or I'll give it to you to make it public.
Yeah, I wouldn't myself either, because there are issues. Now I'll maybe check in to see if that has already been taking place. You know, if one of the papers, for instance, the Miami Herald, Sun Sentinel, Fort Lauderdale, they may have done these kind of things already, you know, put in for those. Find out if that is already in the works.
Right. But even if it is, it doesn't matter. They still have to provide the information. It's a right to know request. If it's under FOIA, anything that is public, and that means any conversation that went on in emails has to be provided. There's no expectation of privacy whatsoever, no matter what the subject is, especially if you narrow it and define it.
Mm-hmm.
Brad, can you kind of talk about the police department? Like what Scott Peterson in particular, what is the story with everything that's going on with that? I know they want to charge him.
Yeah, there was a call for a lawsuit against him a few months back. I'm not sure where that is in the court system now, but he's been effectively removed already. And Israel has already been taken out as well, finally. You know, our former governor, Rick Scott, was just hesitant to do so. He kind of wanted to go through law enforcement investigations and such. Ron DeSantis just didn't even play around. You know, he got basically sworn in on a Tuesday, and by Friday, he was firing the sheriff. That's how quickly he was pulling that trigger. It was just rampant incompetence on the part of Israel. He, you know, was on the CNN town hall claiming they did everything fantastically, and we find out their training was suspect. They had deputies saying the reason they didn't get in, again, they were trying to parse language and say things like, in an active shooter situation, you may go into the building instead of you have to go in. You know, crap like that they were doing. And his own sheriff's department, the union, they had a vote of no confidence on Israel. Believe last summer they conducted that. It came back to something like 70-80%. I mean, it wasn't even close. So he even went so far as to hire a PR firm to try to recover his good name. That's where his focus was about 2 to 3 months.
Bad.
He had a public relations firm out in New York. Crisis management was their specialty in order to repair his image, not repair his department.
You know, and it's kind of, and it sounds like Andrew Pollack is kind of disgusted that people haven't reached out to him and apologized. Like, we're so sorry your daughter died and we screwed up or we did this. I can't imagine hiring a PR firm versus doing a major mea culpa, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's craziness. Let's see, what else did I read in that? And I was just the section where Hunter, the son, goes up in front of everybody. Did you guys read that? It's in the, I think it's in part two of the book, where he goes in front of Mr. Runcie, it was like a public forum, and he actually says, you know, my sister Meadow was killed, and he actually asks about the alarm system. He says one thing Mr. Preston said was that $1 million was slated for a new fire alarm system, which Broward's former director of school safety recommended, including a delay to prevent alarms from sounding unnecessarily.
Jody.
It's fascascinating. I don't know how you could look at that, the brother of Meadow, and not be moved to give some sort of reply. I can't believe Runcie didn't say anything.
Oh, when you have someone, and you know, having dealt with a lot of superintendents in my time frame, you have some really good ones, and you have some really basically egotistical pricks, if you want me to be honest. And that's what Runcie is. First of all, Runcie has no education, no background. He has background whatsoever that would qualify him to even be a superintendent. He is nothing more than a figurehead. Most superintendents usually come up through the ranks. They are teachers. They have educational backgrounds. But I have no idea why they even hired this man. But interestingly enough, if you read in the book, his brother used to work for the U.S. Department of Education with Arnie Duncan. And let me tell you something. Arnie Duncan was an ass who came out of Chicago. He was a terrible in Chicago. He was terrible on the board, you know, the U.S. Department of Education. Some of the comments, and I can't even remember half of them, that the stuff that he wanted school boards to do is just outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. But Runcie, if I was on that school board, I wouldn't shut up once about how bad he is and terrible and corrupt. Corrupt being more important than anything.
I don't know if anybody can hear me, but
Brad, I hear you now.
Brad, did you want to kind of sum up what's going on in your neighborhood or your neck of the woods all of this?
Brad is not coming on the line. Every time we added him, everybody else went dead.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Great. Well, anyway, I don't know if you guys could hear me discussing Hunter's speech, her brother, but he actually, Hunter did the foreword. He also has like made some public statements, and I just feel like, what a great kid. I'm really glad that Andrew Pollack has that support of his, you know, of his son to be there and kind of, you know, help champion on to try to figure out why this happened and get things done.
And I think we're going to be continuing in the same vein, similar to how we are when it comes to human trafficking. This is a subject that I don't believe we should let lie, especially for the safety of all of students that are, you know, in school districts. And parents need to ask questions about what initiatives and what programs that they're putting in place in schools.
Right, right. There should be locked doors. All doors should be locked.
But also, what type of disciplinary programs? In every parents' handbook that you get at the beginning of the year, they should have exactly what the disciplinary measures are. And if you notice something different, you make sure you ask. But one thing I wanted to bring up too is there's a new software out there. It's called the Guardian Indoor Active Shooter Detection, available now across the country. And basically what it does is it's hooked up to your police department, your fire department. And not only is it audio where it catches the sound of a gunshot, but also the flash. And what it does is it automatically downloads to your local police department. They have the floor plan that comes up so they can see exactly where the shooter is. And they're able to respond 10 times faster because it also automatically locks doors because it's part of a big program. And I think if more people look into this program, they're based out of Massachusetts. It's called Shooter Detection Systems. You know, they're just starting now to come into New Hampshire. I believe they actually just installed in Denver, Jody. So you might want to check to see where it is.
Yeah, see which school it was in.
Because this can save lives.
And, oh my gosh, yes, that would have been amazing.
I would be asking Runcie the question. In 2013, you only spent the $5 million. Where's the rest of the money, and where is it gone?
Exactly. 17 children did not need to die that day.
No.
That was neglect. That was, you know, a school district and a school that failed those kids.
From the top down to mental advisors that said it was okay to, you know, when they suspended him, they still had to provide him with services when he was suspended. They didn't.
Yeah,
to the person who went to the dead, I want to harm myself and I want to harm other people.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Well, we're at the top of the hour, so we need to get going. We really appreciate you guys all coming on. Next week, it's going to be Stacey Lennox. You guys know her, Scottsfire. I believe she's going to have the rabbi on to go over what is exactly going on in Israel with their elections, And I'm not sure who her co-host is going to be yet, but please tune in to us next Wednesday night.
So much. Have a good night.